Okay, Ron, thank you so much, and good evening, everybody. It's a little different table we're around tonight, but nevertheless, it's we're here in the building. It's looking kind of homey here a little bit now. We got a little more stuff in here other than just the books. It makes it a little different. So we're going to pick up and do study two in Ecclesiastes tonight. And today's date is April the 11th, 2018. We're going to hopefully finish up chapter one of Ecclesiastes and get into chapter two. And see what Solomon has got for us by the way of his wisdom that was given to him by the Lord. And the notes in the companion Bible says that he had the spirit of prophecy. And so he kind of gets a head up on some things. And one of them was mentioned right here in verse 12. We're looking at verses 12 through 15, and it deals with labor and things done and Solomon's personal search, because he's going through things here that he questions somewhat about, you know, why and what and so forth. And I guess it's kind of a common thing because if you had the job of a king laid upon you, and so you were trying to keep a group of people in line, even though they supposedly had been called by God, and with this group of people, it's pretty tough. And it was all the way down through scripture. But, it makes the point here that, even though Solomon gives in to human, traits and human things, he still tries to hold a line on it, but it's kind of like over with Paul over in Ephesians where he talks about the old man and the new man, you know, and the spirit is either with or upon, but doesn't indwell Solomon. So, he doesn't have that internal GPS system, I guess, to the extent that we do now as being members of the body. And I just wanted to mention that and say that. Let's look at verse 12 in chapter 1 of Ecclesiastes on page 907. If you have a companion Bible, we're looking at 12. It says, I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. The preacher, Solomon, he was king, and he was a king over all of Israel, and he was, after David, he was the only one that was king over all of Israel, because his son, Solomon's son, is going to become king after him, and then another person comes up. And so this is the time that the kingdom gets split up. And Solomon has a kind of a leg up on that. And so he understands by the spirit of prophecy that it's going to happen. So, Solomon at this time also had the spirit of prophecy and was shown that his son Rehoboam would be divided in his kingdom by Jeroboam, and the tribes would be split. So, if you didn't understand or didn't know when the tribes became two different groups. This pretty much tells you here in the notes of verse 12. Then we go down to 13. And we're talking about things done now, the labor. And Solomon had the ways and the means to have it done, to buy it done, if you will, because he was rich. And so he, you know, he had means to do it. So when you talk about doing things or toil, Solomon's toil was that king, I think, kind of overseeing things. And he said, and I, in 13, gave my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under heaven. This sore travail hath God given to the sons of man to be exercised therewith. So 13 says, I, Solomon, gave my heart to seek and search out by chokmah, wisdom, done under heaven, should be rendered under the sun. Because that's, these can be used interchangeably in it. Under heaven means under God's heaven or in the sky where the sun is, literally. And he talks about this sore travail, and sore travail is slave work. Like the children that God chose, they would only have to go back, you know, two or three generations to realize that the work that they did when they were in Egypt. And I'm sure that was handed down from father to son because of the time that they were the 400 some years in Egypt. And and it says when God given to the sons of man, Adam, it's Adam and not Ish. And it's Elohim, not Jehovah, because there's a different situation, a personality thing between the children, between either Elohim speaking or Jehovah speaking. But it's still the same God. It's still basically the Son of God in the sense. To the sons of men to be exercised therewith. And man was told, what was going to be their fate when Adam was taken out of the garden and sent packing, if you will. So, he told him he'd have to make his way by the sweat of his brow and thorns and thistles because the ground had been cursed and thorns and thistles would be abundant in many different aspects, many different ways. And so, but with Solomon, it's a little different because of his stature and who he is and how much money he has or how much stuff he has to do things with. Then we get to 14. And 14 says, I have seen all the works that are done under the sun. Here again, you see it goes back to under the sun. And behold, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. Because Solomon has already said earlier in this chapter that, you know, the things that man do, the toils of natural man, just don't hold very long. And he's wise enough to realize that what God put in force stays. But what man puts in force, if he don't fully tend it all the time, Mother Nature will take it back.
Yeah.
It's temporary. Yeah. Everything man does basically is temporary. And Solomon says, I have seen or I have witnessed all the works of the toils of natural man that are done under the sun or literally on the earth. Because that's what it means. He says, and behold, he says, listen to me and see and understand that all this is vanity. It will not remain. It's temporary. And vexation of the spirit, ruach, found feeding on the wind. That's what vexation is. It's that it feeds on the wind. And the longer it stays out in the climate, the longer it stays on this earth here, it's feeding in the wind. The elements is working on it all the time. And it's trying to hold on. What man puts up, continually trying to hold on. You know, if we build a building and we don't cover it with the right stuff or we don't paint it, you know, it's like an old barn. It'll finally fall down on you. Now, this next verse is something that I experienced myself. And so there's a little story that goes with this next verse. In 15 it says this, that which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. Well, whenever new power come to this part of the world and started buying up land, they bought people out in their homesteads and so on. And being a fireman, we burnt a lot of houses practicing because nobody wanted them. And they wasn't going to leave them, so Duke would rather they'd be burnt down and they could push up the ashes and cover it up.
At least in that day.
Yeah. But I jumped out there and bought a two-story house up at Fall Creek above Salem. And it had a full upstairs. No partitions. It was just a full upstairs. But there was six or seven rooms downstairs. And it had a big old fireplace. And the guy couldn't move the fireplace because it was rock. And so I cut two rooms off of it with a chainsaw and tore the chimney down. I wish I'd have kept the rocks, but I didn't keep the rock. Because at that point in time, it didn't, you know, we had plenty of rocks on the hill anyway. But I went up and paid $735 to get a man to move it. He is in business in Anderson. Lives right down below Lori's mama now. Or dead. I guess he's dead now. But he came up there and moved the house up to where Troy's house is now. And we put blocks under it, and he took his steel out from under the building to go move another. Because they were moving houses all the time then. It was big deal. And so it was sitting up there on them blocks, not cemented, you know, the blocks weren't cemented. We just made pillars and put them under the house. We got up there and started cleaning the thing up. We was gonna make a house out of it, you know, and build a dining room back on it and use the upstairs for bedrooms too. And it had the beaded ceiling in it and all that stuff. And bless your heart, a little old tornado come through Salem, or come through our area, and it blew the house off of them blocks. And it put a twist in the house. Well, I was doing work for a man named Earl Rowland, and I had both of his, he had a D6 and maybe two D6s, Caterpillars there with, cables on them. And, so I had the smart idea it had the winches on where they was pulling logs with them. And I got the smart idea to take them down there, and I was going to hold one of them on one side and pull the other side. And I got down there and kind of got it jacked halfway back up and put some blocks back under. But this verse of scripture is absolutely.
I remember how out of plumb and how true. Out of square everything was.
I could not, with two big crawler tractors that they pulled big logs with out of the mountains, I could not get the crooked out of that house. No way. And my neighbor that lived across the road, he said, what do you take for it? And I said, well, I got $735 in it. He said, well.
Not counting the pain and suffering.
and a couple of chainsaw blades, yeah. Cutting them rooms off and doing all that. And I said, if you want it, I'll take $750 for it if you want to tear it down. And he said, I will, because he was going to extend his house. And so out there now, where Lynn lives, next door to me, is that house incorporated in their house. And it took him a year to get it done, but he got it done. So I didn't lose anything basically off of it. But I'm going to read the verse again. It says, that which is crooked cannot be made straight. And I'm going to tell you right now, that is a truthful verse of scripture. And that which is wanting cannot be numbered. And I wanted it bad. So that which is crooked or blown out of square, in my case, cannot be made straight or squared back up. And that which is wanting, that which I wished to be mine, cannot be numbered. Because lots of times it wasn't meant for that to be yours. And that's all I can say about that. Because I did turn around, change my shop, and made a house out of it. But I was going to make a house out of that and keep my shop. It just didn't work out. So that was my experience. And I hate it in a sense to bring it up, but I tell you, that's truth. That's the honest truth.
Yeah, I remember that well.
And then, so that's 12 through 15. And so 16, 17, and 18 deals with a little different thing, because some of these things goes in one verse and some of them goes in three verses the way that it was written. So 16, 17, and 18 is understanding wisdom. And it says this in 16. I communed with mine own heart, saying, lo, I am come to great estate and have gotten more wisdom than all they that have been before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart hath great experience of wisdom and knowledge. So he is kind of testing himself here concerning what the Lord has given him or what God has let him know. I communed with mine own heart, and sometimes that's a situation that makes you think that one is losing his mind. I said to myself, a lot of times people will do that. They'll say, I said to myself, or I thought to myself. Well, that's when you have to talk yourself into something. How much wisdom is that? And I want you to really think about that. Saying, lo, and I said, wow, I am come to a great estate. I have inherited a royal house. And he says, and I have gotten more wisdom than they all have before me in Jerusalem. Well, Saul was there as king 30 years, and his father David was there 30 years. But he has made the situation there that the Lord has given him more wisdom than actually the both that had been there before him. And it says, yea, my heart hath great experience of wisdom and knowledge. So he has given to the situation that it gives you a kind of a sense of a little ego trip there, to a certain extent, because he's going back and thinking about his dad, and his dad was very smart, and his dad had the eye of the Lord around him and with him, and if he didn't, Saul would have killed him or he wouldn't have made it. But just think of all that David went through there. Then we go to 17. He says this, and I gave my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this is also vexation of spirit. So after he goes on his little ego trip, he kind of comes down off of it just a little bit. And he said, and I, Solomon, gave my heart, or I vowed to know wisdom. And that wisdom is, in the Hebrew, is chokma. And to know madness. And madness is the opposite of wisdom, in the loss of self-control and self-conceit. And so he just had took himself on an ego trip here. And so he's coming down off of it, and he says, I gave my heart to know wisdom, but I also know madness also. And that's the opposite of wisdom, and the loss of self-control and self-conceit. We now, in this day and age, and what Paul has left with us, we call this allowing the old man in. In today's, in the coined phrase truth for today, that's where we at. And folly. Now, folly is infatuation. An infatuation is to be totally carried away by unreasoning passion and or attraction. And so that's one thing that Solomon, we talked about the Song of Solomon where he wanted the young lady so bad. And he had all these women already, about 200 of them at that time. And he wound up with about 1,000, but what can you do with
a lot of them? They took him up on his own.
Yeah. But, so this infatuation with the opposite sex is, really a thing with Solomon. And he says, I perceive or I understand that this is also vexation of spirit. And, that's the same as we read in verse 14 when I said, found feeding on the wind. You know, what are you going to do with all this, with all these people that you've gathered up to say you have a harem of passionate people? How many of them? You know, can you truly live with it one time? It's hard for me to live with one at the time. And I thought she was an angel. He says it's the same as it's blowing in the wind, and both but have the same understanding and still not act in the right manner. That's the way he's feeling about this. And the word in the Hebrew is bina. The notes tell us. And so, you know, he goes on his ego trip and then he comes off, but he still realizes it. He overindulges in things. So we get down to verse 18. And this is the last one in chapter 1. It says, for in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increases knowledge increases sorrow. So, that's pretty self-explanatory in a sense. And much wisdom of Chokma is much grief. That's mortification. That means the control of physical desires by self-denial, even to shame. And he that increases knowledge or learning increases sorrow, which is mental suffering caused by loss. You can't have everything you want. And that's what a person like Solomon is. He sees something and he knows he is capable of taking care of it. And if he can't have it, he feels real sorrowful about it because it's just like the young lady that he tried to get and he couldn't get her and he tried and tried and tried and then he was sorrow because he lost out. He didn't make it.
Being king didn't help that situation either.
No, you know, this is...
It's kind of almost like giving the hen house over to the fox.
Yeah, well, a king needs to understand that he cannot have everything that he desires. But that's what a monarch does. He tries to accumulate all this stuff for himself. Okay, so we get down to chapter 2 in verse 1. And let's see, 1, 2, and 3. Is listed as pleasure salt. And so let's see what he says about that. How are we doing on time? Okay. I said in mine heart, go to now, I will prove thee with mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure, and behold, this also is vanity.
Even the
pleasure. Yeah. So, he says, I said in my heart, I choose to convince myself. Again, this is something that Solomon is saying to himself. Yeah, you know, I want this or I need this or I'm going to talk myself into it or something. By saying, go to now. I will prove thee or prove you with mirth. And I looked up mirth. I said, I hadn't saw this in scripture yet. And so I looked up mirth and it's joyfulness, gaiety, or merriment, meaning fun, down to a party. Just feel good, do things, have fun. Therefore, he says, enjoy. You look into pleasure and behold, he says, see also this. It is also vanity. All the pleasure that you can have is like blowing in the wind. It's soon to be of no use, or when everybody leaves, you're going to be as lonely or as down as you was before they got there. So it's just like a house sitting out there, a building blowing in the wind you've built. All of it catches the elements. And he says in verse 2, a set of laughter, it is mad. And of mirth, what doeth it? The question is, what doeth it? So he says, a set of laughter, or having fun. Hey, it's mad. It's the opposite of wisdom. So maybe this gift that God gave Solomon, sometimes he kindly wanted to step back away from a little bit. You wonder? And of mirth, the things in verse 1, the joyfulness, the fun, the gaiety, the merriment, the party that's being had here. What doeth it, or what good is it? When it's all said and done, nothing really good comes of that either. So we look at verse 3, and he says, I sought in mine heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting mine heart with wisdom and to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was that good for the sons of men, which they should do under the heaven or on the earth, actually, all the days of their life. Because they couldn't go anywhere. I mean, everybody was under the sun on the earth. They didn't have NASA to take them anywhere at that point. So whatever they done was going to be here on the earth. They couldn't get away. I sought in my heart, or I resolved to give myself unto wine. I gave myself unto wine. I taught myself how to enlist by yaying, alcoholic wine. My very flesh in that work. He said, I give my body and my flesh over to getting drunk. Yet acquainting my heart with the work rather than with the wisdom. The work of getting drunk rather than studying on what the right thing is to do. And to lay hold on folly. Now we read folly in 17. That was infatuation, to be totally carried away by unreasoning passion and or attraction. Till I might see what was good, what was that good for the sons of men of the sons of Adam, which they should do under the heavens or under the sun all the days of their lives, their numbered days. He said their days is numbered.
So he says he basically started drinking and laid hold on folly till I might see what was good for the sons of men and what they ought to be doing with the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It is amazing.
Sometimes amazes you what you can see in Scripture.
And then you get to verse 4. In verses 4 through 8, he talks about labor and great works. And this was Solomon looking at himself now and not at his people. Because Solomon is a very egotistical person. It was for Solomon. It was for the king first. It was not for the rest of the people like it was for Solomon. We'll just put it that way. Okay. I, Solomon, made me great works. He said in 4, I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards. Yeah. I bet he planted them. He had it done. I, Solomon, made me great works. I increased or multiplied my earthly possessions. I built me houses. I planted me vineyards. That is work and its result, regardless of who did it. Somebody had to do it. And so this is... This is how he's reasoning here. And then in verse 5 it says, I made me gardens and orchards, and I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruit. And I said, in 5, I need to read the note in the CB. And where it says orchards there, gardens and orchards. And the word there in the Hebrew is paradisim. It means paradises, parks, or pleasure grounds.
They were lavish.
It's different from gardens which were cultivated. And these pleasure grounds, he put in ponds and all this stuff and you know, he kind of had a kind of a nature park there in that situation. And it says paradises were formed by Eastern monarchs. In the British Museum may be seen the inscriptions by Gaudia, the greatest of these Sumerian rulers of Chaldea in 2500 B.C. So, this wasn't a strange thing that a king would do that. I made me gardens and orchards, and I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruit. Verse 6. And I made me pools of water to water therewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. The saplings, I guess when he was digging out and making these places for pools of water, that the trees, the young trees, the saplings were planted there, that bringeth forth trees or that grows in the forest. You know, you might incorporate stuff that was there already, but the king, if he wanted to do his thing,
give the king's touch.
So he could give it to Kingsted. Yeah. And then verse 7 sheds a little light on how he's doing all this labor, all this work. Okay. 7 says this, I got me servants and maidens and had servants born in my house. Also, I had great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. He says, I've got the stuff now that the other kings didn't have. You know, he's down the road after 60 years of having the other two kings plus his time now, he's getting it like he wants it, see. So he says, I got me servants or laborers and maidens. And had servants born, Ebed, in my house. And that Ebed is, I guess it's Hebrew for young, they didn't really call them slaves, they call them servants. Born in my house. Also, I had great possessions of great and small cattle above all the rulers. And I assume the large and the small cattle were like cows and sheep and the small animals you'd see in places, and then you'd have the bigger animals for the feeding of his royal tables, I guess, because you know quite well as I do the feeding of a great number in a big house or in a palace would be quite a large undertaking. And so you would have to have, you know, the wherewith to raise all these things and where you could put them on your table. And he said, I had great possessions of these cattle and things that were there that the other kings just didn't have. And, of course, David couldn't slow down long enough to have because he was always chased and by those that hated him. And so he couldn't stay in one place very long. He had to find holes and dens to stay in a lot of times. Verse 8, and he says, I gathered me also silver and gold and the peculiar treasures of kings and of the provinces. I got me men singers and women singers and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments and that of all sorts. So here again is a king delving into things that he just felt like he couldn't do without. And he said, I gathered or amassed kanas. I gathered me also silver and gold and peculiar treasure. Peculiar treasure is 5459 in the Strong's. And it's called shut up wealth, such as jewels, crowns, and special things of the one that reigns the country, like the clothing and all this. He had the attire of the king. And it was different from any of the other kings, I guess. He says of kings and of the providences. It's and the providences there is he is showing that he controls land out in the outlying areas that the Israelites had, because he was the king of all of Israel. They couldn't all live in Jerusalem, so in all the land that God gave to Abraham to give to his children, you know, this was the land that Solomon controlled. And he said, I got me men singers. Not only that, but women singers also. And the delights or the enjoyments of the son of Adam, the son of men, as musical instruments, and I made a note of this, and this is things that was brought about or learned by the Canaanites and passed on, because it was given to the Canaanites back in Genesis to come up with the octaves of music and to be able to write the notes, I guess, for this music. And it says, and that of all sorts. So I don't know what and all kind of instruments they had to make music with, but you know, David liked to dance, and he would dance in the streets, and they would make merriment and music with his dad. And so he knew where to go and get this stuff or have it brought, you know, to him or whatever. So it was unusual, but, you know, it comes right out of the pits of the ones that were going to be the enemies of Solomon and his craft. And it goes back to the ninth verse, and we'll stop with this because this is only one verse, and it deals with wisdom. And also I put this us. I don't know what I did that for, but I guess I'll have to read it to see. So I was great and increased more than all that was before me in Jerusalem, and my wisdom remained with me.
I guess it ain't bragging if you can back it up, though, because he...
Well, the wisdom part, he could back up.
Yeah.
But now, and God didn't take it away from him. I'll give him that. That when he was doing this book, he still had his wisdom, although he was struggling with it a little bit. But man does that.
At least he had enough wisdom to realize that he too was indulging in the vanity.
Yeah, and the things that wasn't going to last.
Honest with himself, anyway.
Yeah, right. So it says, so I was great, yet his wisdom given by God remained with him and increased, because he says it grew more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom, this gift of God, remained with me. And so he still gives God the credit for giving him that wisdom. And it remained with him, although he was very egotistical and he was for himself more than he was for the Israelites that he was ruling. But he didn't deny himself none of these good pleasures. He did them just like David did them to that. to some extent, at least. And so, and then the next verse is a single verse too. And, 11 also. But we'll leave that till next time and we'll stop with 9. There it's at the bottom of the page in the second chapter. We'll pick up with verse 10 with Ecclesiastes and goes on the next time. But it's really interesting to see how that he gets off track and then he makes the effort to get back on the track. He uses a little bit of his wisdom and then he turns around and he says, well, you know, I'd like to have this and I'm going to do this and I'm going to get this done. And then, well, you know, I'll come back a little bit and then I'll get down here in verse 9. I'll give God the glory for giving me all this wisdom and it's a gift. And I have the gift of prophecy. This was another gift, I guess, of wisdom that goes along probably with it in some sense. And but he does turn around and he does make that statement that he gives God the honor of at least carrying him through this, carrying him into it. But he has a time with himself and with his ego. And I guess I would say this. If, who knows? You know, I don't do it much. I have done it before. But, you know, to go buy a lottery ticket, it'd be worth millions of dollars if you won. Well, what would you do? You know, would you kind of be in the same shape as Solomon was? If you, it seems like it ruins most of them.
Committed suicide.
Committed, yeah. Because they don't know what to do with it.
They
don't have the knowledge and the wisdom. Or what little wisdom they have is used up.
It goes out the window.
Yeah, and it's used up, and they just don't know how to handle it. So, therefore, you know, Solomon might have had some of these same traits, but it seems like man, in its essence, is in the fallen state, is kind of that way, or in the natural state. That he wants to do the things that looks good, feels good, all this thing. To please yourself. A self-satisfying thing. And so, I guess if nothing else, you know, we think back to the Song of Solomon and realize how hard he tried to get that young girl to give up her boyfriend after she had promised him that she would marry him. And he offered her to be high queen. And she wouldn't do it. And that also gives you the understanding that even the king don't get everything he wants.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the good end of that story.
Yeah. And so we now know by reading some of this, we now have a better view of the Song of Solomon. And I'm glad I did it first because it gives you a greater insight into this man and what he's, how he's thinking and how he's doing. And that's the reason it was used at the feast of Passover. That it was either acted out or read or somehow disseminated to the people for every year at the time of Passover, which we call Easter. I know Ronnie don't like that, but that's another deal, you know. But that's how man is. So thank you for being with us tonight and going over this. It's again, it's another one of these books that I have been over one time before, but still not with the same view that I've got today, because I've grown some in understanding a little better about the Old Testament. And it seems like the more you get involved in it, the more what Paul says later on has a greater effect in your life and understanding of the mystery truth. Because man, what he said when he set Israel aside there, he said, we'll go to the Gentiles and they'll hear it. Man, that's like building a wall, in a sense. And then what was said is, you know, so much different than what Israel had been promised. So much different. We'll talk about that a little bit at our conference. So thank you for being with us, and God bless you. And pray for us, and also pray for my first cousin's husband. He's in Florida, and I think he's kind of given up on life. And she got hospice and helping her a little bit with him now. And they've lived a good life, but it's evidently soon going to be gone away. So remember him. His name is Jim Black. You can't hardly forget Jim Black. God bless.